You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name is Tony East. I'm one of the hosts of this lovely show. And today, joining me on the other line, continuing my tour de media to talk Pacers and a little football because it's very topical right now, from the Indy Star, Schultz and Doyle podcast, Derek Schultz. Derek, how's it going, man?
Hey, Tony. I mean this in the most complimentary way possible because I think this is the highest compliment that you can give a podcast host, notably an NBA one. But that intro sounded very Zach Lowe-ish. Has anybody told you that? Like your cadence reminds me a lot of the Lowe post.
He always does the welcome to, and it's like the exact same every time, and I have no idea.
I love the pause, though. There's just like that's like his trademark, and I think that he knows that it's kind of corny, but there's just something really endearing about it.
I know. I don't know how he does it so well. I swear it's like cut. Like he's got like that soundbite copied, and then he does everything else. I don't know. Derek, normally I open with a sports question, but these times call for different questions. So what have you been doing to stay busy during these different times?
Yeah, you know, it's been just like everybody else. You know, you're just trying to kind of get through each day, right? Thankfully, now as we turn the calendar into May, it looks like there might be a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel to return, depending on what your definition of normal is, not all the way normal, but return to maybe some normal things or start to phase those things in. But look, I'm not going to lie. It's been challenging. For those that don't know, I got laid off in January and, you know, you kind of mentally reset and you take a few weeks off and then you start getting itching to go again. You know what I mean? And right when I was kind of starting to hit the ground running with, you know, applications and resumes and networking and all that stuff, this thing hits and just kind of reshuts everything down. So it's kind of weird, but it was sort of like getting laid off again. You know, you get laid off once and then you get laid off. It's like getting reset. But it's been a lot of anxiety and all of that because I've got the job search going on. My wife is an ICU nurse at Methodist that works on the COVID unit. So we've got that happening. So it's been a lot. The important thing is everyone's happy, healthy, safe. We have a 3-year-old. I've been doing a lot of daddy time. And
there's your full-time job right there.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, just trying to kind of figure out what the next step is going to be for me, in my career during the middle of a worldwide pandemic and potentially an upcoming recession. So it's been a unique couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah, that the laughter at the end there was not fitting for what you just said. But
you know, you know what, man, I'm a positive thinker. So it's really kind of hard for me to get down. I like to remain optimistic at all times, but I'm not going to lie to you, man. It's been a challenge, and there have been some days that have been really tough. But you know, I'm hopeful, and I don't want to, you know, come on here and start crying about my situation. Everybody's got their own thing that they're going through right now. We're in a much better position than a lot of people are really, really hurting right now, and we're not. So yeah, it's stress, it's anxiety, and stuff like that. But it's not, you know, I'm going to lose my house, or you know, I can't afford my car payment, you know, stuff like that. So I don't want to certainly make it sound like my plight is any worse than anybody else's. Everybody's going through something right now, and it just sucks. That's all there is to it.
It certainly does. And normally people have sports to get through sucky times, and they don't even have that right now. So this sports podcast has not been the release that I would hope it would be during these times. But before we get to Pacers talk, I have exactly 5 Pacers questions on the season and various things. I want to talk to you about the topical thing that just happened that I don't know enough about, but most people who keep up with sports know more about. The NFL draft just happened, and the Colts apparently did really well. I know none of the players they drafted. I know they drafted a running back in the second round, and I know the running back is not a very popular position in the NFL right now, but Derek Schultz, he used to write about the Colts and then covered every indie everything for basically a decade. What were your thoughts on the Colts draft?
Well, let's get this out of the way first. These draft grades and stuff like that, it's so ridiculous because right now we have no idea when any of these guys are going to be. You know what I mean? So, you know, the Colts got an A-. You know,
people are so starved for content, though, that I give them a pass this time. Just this time.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And I think a lot of the grades, I think there is something to, did you reach on a guy? Did you get good value for where you selected? Did you make the right trade and get the right capital back in return? Like there are some things that you can grade general managers on that I think are legitimate. It's just impossible to project who any of these guys are going to be 5 years from now, because you could have, you know, Trent Richardson was the next Adrian Peterson until he wasn't, right? But I think what tends to happen, Tony, is that when a team goes out and addresses clear needs, that's when they get good grades. And the Colts went out there and addressed some clear needs, starting at wide receiver, where they're just really, really hurting. I mean, they've basically had T.Y. Hilton and some chewing gum and a ball of lint in the last couple
you
of
and
years
I.
at that spot. Yeah, pretty much. you know, Michael Pittman, bringing him in from USC, an insanely productive big target, 6'4", 1,200 yards receiving, which you don't really see those numbers all the time anymore. And not particularly for a great USC team. I mean, a USC team that went 8-5 last year. He only had 5 drops and 176 career targets. So it looks like he could come in and be their second option that they've really needed behind T.Y. Hilton. Maybe be what they thought Devin Funchess was going to be until he broke his collarbone in the third quarter of the first game last year. And then you had mentioned the running back, Jonathan Taylor, who was insanely productive at Wisconsin. He ran for a bajillion yards against Indiana and Purdue, like all Wisconsin running backs seem to do. And they actually traded up in the second round to get him, which I don't love trading up and using that high of a pick on a running back. But if it means they're not going to give the long-term extension to Marlon Mack, I think that's shrewd roster management, because I think, as you mentioned, in today's day and age, what you can't do outside of the really special running backs, like, okay, Christian McCaffrey, fine. If you want to extend him, cool. I'm good with that. But outside of these super, super elite guys, you don't want to invest a ton of money in. You want to chew up a running back on its rookie contract and spit him out and get the next guy in there. And I think that's what they're going to do with Taylor. Originally, he's going to come in as a compliment to Mack. Mack will play a year or two more, and then that, you know, you move on. And then maybe Taylor is your guy after that. And then deeper in the draft, I think they really shored up the special teams, which they needed to do. It's not particularly been a great special teams unit. So you got some later round draft picks like the Glasgow kid from Michigan, who I think is going to kind of fill that role for them. Jacob Eason at quarterback obviously is an interesting one. Anytime a team drafts a quarterback that needs one, but I think really that's a flyer more than anything else to see if there's something there. You know, Eason is the classic guy, and you see these guys in the NBA draft all the time that come in and have this amazing body, but they can't play, right? And that's essentially, I don't want to say Eason can't play. He can, but he just can't play. You know, you see him and you're next to him and he's 6'6" and he's got this big arm. And then you actually watch him play and you're like, God, this guy's got all these physical gifts. So what's he doing? Why can't he be dominant? And I think the Colts are hoping to kind of fine tune some of those things. And another guy that interests me is not just because he went to Ball State, but Danny Pinter, who I think they hope is going to be their next Joe Wrights, a guy that can play guard and tackle and be kind of their Swiss Army knife as a backup offensive lineman. So not a super sexy draft or anything like that, but I think they went out there and shored up some offensive line depth needs, some wide receiver needs, some special teams needs, defensive backfield, the same thing. So we'll see how it goes. I think the question is, when are these guys going to be able to get here, and what are they going to be able to do? Is there going to be any sort of an off-season program at all? I mean, I lean towards probably not. You know, maybe they still do a training camp, but there's just so much uncertainty about what these schedules are really going to look like, even into the late summer and early fall.
Yeah, I did keep up with this story because I thought it was fascinating about the guys who, like, made sure to sign deals before the draft because they can't do physicals. So they were worried about not getting a deal after the draft done at all, because they can't just visit the team.
Yeah, and like, think of all the guys, and you've got undrafted free agents who, you know, maybe the Colts brought in somebody or the Ravens or whatever, and they weren't drafted, but they knew that they liked them. And so they already had, they'd been to their pro day or they had seen him at the comp, you know what I mean? They had already had something to go on. I really feel for the guys, and this is a very small amount of people that actually make the team, but they do have open tryouts. And there are cases where guys just show up for these open tryouts and they end up joining the team, or they're invited to come in and try out. And I just kind of wonder, it's not like the Colts can invite somebody to hop on a plane and come to Indianapolis and try out for them.
Yeah.
That's not happening anytime soon.
Hey guys, I want to take a short little break to talk to you about the lovely people over at Blinkist. In these trying times, it can be a little harder to find time to sit down and read a bit more. When you don't have free time, you can't read, you can't work on personal development or anything like that. But let me tell you about my secret weapon for learning new things and getting ahead. It's Blinkist. It's the perfect, incredible app to solve this problem. Blinkist is super unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, or on the internet, on your browser, on your computer. It takes the best key takeaways, need-to-know information from tons of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes. For you to read, successful people like business leaders are known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist can make that possible for people like you. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive growing library from self-help, business, health, and history books. It has the latest titles from bestsellers, as well as classic nonfiction titles you've always meant to read but never had the time to. I like Blinkist the best because, you know, it can get me all this information really quickly, fast track my path to getting all the information I need from a book that I don't frankly have the time to read. So you can go check out Blinkist with unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books right now. For a limited time, go to Blinkist.com/MBA to try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off any new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled BLINKIST.com/MBA to start your 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/MBA.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. At least for football, they can have their start at about the normal time. I guess we'll see though. Derek, this is a Pacers podcast, so we need to talk some basketball and some Pacers. I saw you, I believe, at the last Pacers home game, or was it a couple before that?
That would have been, I think that was the Oladipo return game.
Was it really that long ago?
I went, well, you know, that was, yeah, because that would have been the last week of January, right?
Yep.
I went back two other times, but both times not as media. I don't remember if I ran into your query. I think he knows that people know this. Jake Query, my former co-host, has been dating Shannon Walsh, the daughter of Donnie Walsh, for like 100 years. And she has Donnie Walsh's seats, which are front row right behind the scorer's table. And I think she has four of them, and usually only two of them are occupied. So if I go over there and I'm just going as a fan or whatever, a lot of times I'll just hang out and sit. Usually Jake's there too, and I'll go hang out in the VIP seats with Jake and Shannon. And I'll see all the media people walk by because you know, a lot of them walk by to go up to section 20 or where, you know, wherever they're sitting for the media seats.
Yeah, you're so much closer than me. I'll switch you next game.
Oh, dude, those seats, yeah. The great thing about Bankers Life is that it's a great place to watch a game.
And it is.
Especially with the scoreboard now, the balcony seats even aren't that bad because whatever you miss, you just see on that huge scoreboard.
Yep.
But those seats are insane.
So the Pacers were rolling when things shut down finally after a tough stretch in early February. And you know, it's been kind of a wild roller coaster year, a bunch of new guys, injuries to this guy, injuries to that guy. This guy returns after a year out, just at the same time as another guy is going to be out for a year. There's a lot you can unpack, but we'll just zoom out as far as we can. Derek, what were your general thoughts on the season that happened up to this point?
God, you know, I felt like I really kind of yo-yoed there through the final, I want to say like 6 weeks, because it just kind of felt like, you know, every time I was out, they were pulling me back in. And then when I come back in, they push me back out. And I guess they were pulling me back in by the time the season, I came to a standstill, because they had been playing, as you said, good basketball in that stretch after just kind of a disastrous start to February, where they were not only were they losing a bunch of games to some not great competition.
Your Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, they were losing games to teams without – I mean, I remember the Mavericks came to Banker's Life, and they dressed like – it felt like they dressed six guys, you know.
And Luka was not one of the six guys.
Yeah, so and New Orleans maybe I was thinking New Orleans. New Orleans had three or four of their top guys out. You know, that was really frustrating. But then to see them bounce back the way that they did, they had a nice win. I know it's not a vintage San Antonio team or anything like that, but they went to San Antonio and won. They returned to Dallas and won, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, was the second to last game before the shutdown. Yeah. Then they beat Boston. Or no, they played Boston. They played Boston close.
They should have beat Boston, but Oladipo forgot how clocks work.
That's right. So they, I want to say maybe went like, did they win like 8 of 10 to end?
Something like that. They had like the best 10-game stretch in the Eastern Conference, and then it just ended.
Yeah. So they ended up, I think, 39-26. So, you know, around 15 games over 500. I guess, Tony, I think that I absorbed this Pacer season maybe differently than some, because to me, I approached this as a punt year. I just felt like with the Oladipo injury and transitioning him back, all the new faces, this was never going to be more to me than a year where, you know, if they could get into the playoffs and win a first-round series or even be competitive in a first-round series, I would probably be cool with that. Like, that's the line of my expectations. So the fact that they were there to be a top-5 seed and, I think, to be competitive in a first-round series if we don't end up getting to see that, I'm not sure, that probably lines up with about my bar of expectations for the Pacers this year. So I can't say that it was a disappointing season. It was just a bit of a roller coaster season. And I think you saw that a little bit with individual players, like even Malcolm Brogdon, who, you know, seemingly it was up and down. You know, Oladipo, the same thing, where he comes back and everyone's excited. And then, you know, the shot's not really there. And I think you knew there was going to be a little bit of rust.
Not really there is the most generous I've ever heard.
I'm trying to be nice. I mean, this dude had a major, major injury, and he comes back. But yeah, you know, it's I know, and you get this all the time, and there is a certain subset of the Pacers fanship, which is, I think for the most part, they've got a great fan base. But there's this just certain faction that it's always like, when they're unless they're contending for championships, it's, oh God, same old Pacers. Yeah, they're going to lose in the first round again. God, they suck. And, you know, I extract a lot of entertainment from just seeing them be competitive. And, you know, I thought that series against Cleveland 2 years ago, they were one and done in the playoffs, right? They lost the first round series. Normally, who cares? I thought that was a great series. It was so much drama. And that was a fun season. I'll never forget the Boyan game. And where he just lit them up. And I just think that if you can't find things to enjoy during the course of the season, even when the season doesn't turn into anything, I think you're doing yourself a real disservice as a fan. And that's from me speaking from my media pulpit. I'll say this, you know, I thought that the Pacers were at times better than I expected, at times worse than I expected, but for the most part, they were right in line with what I thought were the best case scenario expectations for them. So I think if you're just adding up the, whatever it was, almost, you know, 55 games, I think the Pacers had, if this is it, if this is, we're closing the book on the 1920 season, I think the season was just fine.
Yeah. I like the punt your thought line, just because we had no idea, like they had so many new guys and Vic was out for forever. There was no way they could reasonably say we can guarantee this or that or whatever. And to me, it felt a lot like building blocks, you know, see what, because really the big thing for me with Vic out for so long was, okay, this two center experiment, how's this going to go? And combine that with all the other new guys. Okay. What fits together? You know, what can we use for the year? Vic is back the entire year when we aren't really in a punt. I do air quotes around that every time, even though you can't see me in a punt year anymore. What can we use going forward? And I think we learned a lot about that, which to me is my bar for a successful season is, okay, do we have answers going forward, right? Yeah, this two-center thing can work, although is it good enough to win you stuff if your team gets expensive? I don't know. And the playoffs would have been helpful information for that. We don't have it. But they did good. Without Vic, they were like 10, 12 games over 500. I forget, something good. You know, they showed they have a talented roster even without their all-star guard. Sabonis got to that level. You know, they set themselves up to show that no matter what happens in the coming offseason, they'll still be good, if not very good, with improved health next season. And they, you know, have wiggle room if they need it by getting rid of one of their young centers. And to your point about losing in the first round but still being really good, you know what? If you're a fan of the team, unless you're one of the, you know, dial all the way in diehards who just wants a title or wants the optimal team building hinky special, whatever, like, to me, if you're, you know, if you pay a ticket to watch a basketball team, you want them to bust their ass and try their hardest to win every night. And the Pacers do that, even if they aren't the most talented team. And I think they put a good product out for those fans, even if that isn't the fan I interact with on Twitter all the time. I always forget that. But
yeah, I don't remember what the exact math was, but if you're a team, I did the math before the show, and I don't have it in front of me. They lost like what, 70% of their minutes played from last year.
Insane.
If you lose 70% of your minutes, and clearly we can sit here all day and ask, you know, is Young, Bogey, Collison, Joseph, you know, is that group as good as Brogdon, Warren, Lamb? You know what I mean? We could go all day, but the point is that they didn't get worse.
Right.
And there was a chance that they were going to get a lot worse after losing all of those guys, and they didn't. So I think that alone is a compliment to the 1920 team.
Yep. And they didn't get worse, and they kept this team that they have now for at least 3-4 years.
Yeah. And they lined up, as Pritchard said he wanted to do, they lined up the core years of the team so the ages weren't all over the place.
Yep. All right, let's get to specific players. There's a lot of options here, actually. This question is hard. This question's usually not a hard question after seasons. This one's hard. What individual player impressed you the most this season?
I always worry when guys leave losing situations.
Ah, good answer.
And then, I mean, right, you know, Tyreek Evans is a great example.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring up Jake again, which I hate doing because I hate giving him credit for anything. But he has a term where he's a 2025 guy. And that means a 20-point-per-game scorer on a 25-win team. And okay. And that's kind of what Tyreek Evans was, right? And I liked Warren, you know, having the chance to talk to him a couple of times. I think you could tell that, you know, he said all the right things and the mentality was there. And you never really know until a guy gets on the court and he gets with his new teammates how he's going to be. But that deal, I mean, just what a stroke of brilliance. See, not only did you not give up anything, you got something back for him. And I think he did just as good as what Bogdanović probably would have done. And, you know, you got him for 60% the cost or whatever it was, and a very manageable team-friendly deal that Phoenix wanted to dump so they could free up another slot. So I think the easy answer is Warren, because I knew he could score. I just had no idea that he'd be that good, and he really was. And you know what, Tony? He was efficient.
Yeah, very.
And that was the other thing that really kind of struck me. There were some games where it felt like he would have, you know, 24 points on, you know, 10, 11 shots, and you're like, damn, you know, where did this come from? So.
Yeah.
I think the easy answer there is Warren. I was really impressed with Brogdon early on. Obviously, that fizzled out a little bit down the stretch. And you know, his durability and all that, which has always been a concern when he signed that big deal. But yeah, I think Warren is the go-to answer. I think most people would say Warren, don't you?
Yeah, he's in my top three for that answer for sure.
Yeah.
Him, Sabonis, and my answer is actually TJ McConnell, which I'll talk about in a second. But
oh, you know what? That's fair, because when they were playing McConnell early on over Collison,
I thought he was terrible was like, the first five games.
Yeah, over Holiday, I was like, what the hell are they doing here?
Yeah.
This guy, you know, he can't do this. And then, he was terrific for them.
He and every game, the same energy, the same shit, and it always worked. And it was always like, no matter what four guys that were around him, like, he can make something happen. And he's not a bad defender, and he's annoying. And, you know, like, I have people who cover the team the Pacers are about to play on to like preview the game, right? And I'm like, what matchup, you know, could the Pacers do in this game? And every single team, I swear, says, oh, TJ McConnell kills our team. It's like, no, he kills every team because that's just how he plays out there. I want to go back to Tyreek Evans for a second. I wasn't planning on talking about this. Tyreek Evans literally changed the way I evaluate signings in the NBA because they got Tyreek Evans last summer, and I thought, that's it. That's the perfect guy. They couldn't get Vic out of these double teams in the playoffs. There's their answer. Done. Like, they just got substantially better, and then he just sucked. And now, you know, they bring in Brogdon, who I do the same thing. I'm like, wow, yes, perfect fit with Vic. This guy can dribble and defend. Oh, wait. I just had this play out horribly. I need to, like, temper every expectation and wait and see because he just, like, it was – even if he was a 2025 guy, that he was – he couldn't make layups for an entire – it was something.
Yeah, I the layup thing just – I've never – I don't think I've ever seen a guy miss – that many shots from that close of a proximity. It just seemed like he was, you know, we talked about how efficient TJ Warren was. And it felt like Evans was, you know, it felt like he had 95% of the play complete all the time. And just the last 5%, which actually leads to the points he couldn't complete. Yeah. So it was very, he was a very, very frustrating. And, you know, I'm trying to be somewhat sensitive to his
right
personal issues, you know what I mean? Because clearly there was some stuff there that we didn't all know about until the news broke. But yeah, that was one of those that it felt like it was the perfect fit and then, you know, it didn't work out. But that's life. I mean, that's life with free agency in the NBA and all sports.
Yeah. So, Derek, last Pacers question I have. Right now, the Pacers would be in a somewhat heated playoff battle, hopefully, with someone, Miami, Philly, Boston, who knows? And every time the playoffs happen, the discussion always turns to Nate McMillan. Is this guy the right guy? Can he win in the playoffs? What do you think of Nate McMillan? Do you think he's the right guy for the head of this team? Do you think he does have some playoff issues? Is he the right guy for this core they have? What are your thoughts?
This is such a cop-out answer.
Yes, it is. I love it.
My answer is that I don't think Nate McMillan is a great coach. I don't know how much it really matters in the NBA. I've always felt like the NBA was a players' league. And so you're only as good, the cook is only as good as the ingredients. And I think that to an extent that's true in all sports, but I think it's just especially true in the NBA. I think McMillan is perfectly fine. I've never felt that he was an amazing head coach. I don't think he's a terrible one. I think he's kind of right down the middle. And, you know, some would say, hey, maybe that's fitting for a Pacers franchise that is kind of right in the middle of the NBA. They're never bad, but they're very rarely great. So they're just kind of hanging around the middle for the last 30 years or so. I don't love his substitution patterns.
I don't think anybody does.
I don't think he has it. I just don't think that, and maybe he would admit this, I don't think he just has the best feel for kind of the flow of what's happening as far as, you know, it feels like he's set in his ways about, okay, now this is the time that I decided that I was going to pull this person and replace him. So I'm still going to do that. I think sometimes you have to kind of adjust to what's going on. And I don't know that he always does that. I think that's one of his biggest flaws. And the second biggest flaw is the one that everybody mentioned.
In the game.
You know, yeah, late game situations, yep. Right? So, you know, drawing up plays and all that. But you know what? Honestly, Tony, Frank Vogel stunk at that too. You know, it feels like the Pacers have had a problem with that for a long, long time where these late game situations, the joke always was that Roy Hibbert was going to hook up a contested, you know, 25 footer and the game was going to go to overtime because it just felt like it was always some broken mess of a play. And I think the same could be said a lot of the times for Nate. So he's such a polarizing figure because there are people that are very defensive of him. And then there are people that think that he's like the worst coach to ever live. And I'm kind of in the middle there. I mean, I would lean towards the good side. I think Nate McMillan is in the top half of coaches in the league, but I think he's at the very bottom of that top half. He'd be somewhere, you know, probably in the 12 to 15 range.
Yeah, but, you know, losing in the first round sucks if you're a fan. Like, I sympathize with that 100%. With McMillan, it's hard for me. I don't think he's been particularly well in the playoffs. I will say this. He has lost as the higher seed exactly one time in the playoffs. That's pretty good. Now, he's only been the higher seed for, like, three series, but He won more of those than he lost. However, yes, if you look at his playoffs, he has gotten out of the first round one time. So there's some gripes there. And I think your ranking of him in the league is about right, which is a hard spot because, you know, I think you can have the ambition of, okay, we clearly know that, like, you can look around the league and say, besides the Spurs, every team is taking more threes than the Pacers and say, well, first of all, is that the right strategy? But if the Pacers were taking more threes, would they be better? Should they get a coach who emphasizes these things? But is that coach actually going to make them better, or is he just going to make them do this one thing everybody wants? It's very hard line to toe, especially with a guy who's right in the middle, because you never really know if the guy you're going to get is going to be better.
Yeah, I think the good news is that unlike a lot of teams, you never have to worry about there being a lot of drama between the front office and the head coaching staff, because Pritchard and McMillan go so far back that, you know, even if Pritchard has to make a decision, I'm not saying that he's never going to fire Nate. I mean, if he has to fire him, he will at some point. But I think that you never have to worry about there being drama between those two, whereas you see time and time again, often elsewhere, where, you know, it's not the GM's guy, it wasn't his hire, he wants out, they fight, you know, whatever else. I don't think you ever have to worry about that. So, you know, he's the he's like the Hyundai Sonata of head coaches. You know, he's been around forever. It's a reliable car, but it certainly ain't a Ferrari, and it's not even a Lexus.
Yeah. Well, who was the coach of this? I promise this will get back to me going. Who's the coach of the Colts when they ran that ridiculously stupid fake punt thing? Was that Pagano?
Pagano, yeah.
So I keep seeing things that are like, when Pagano did that fake punt, media just slammed this dude for years and years and years about plays and about this and that. And McMillan calls a terrible end of game play and skates by all the time. I think there's some credence to that, that there's not enough critical McMillan stuff going around. However, I also think McMillan's not given enough credit for the good things he does in terms of player camaraderie, and the good regimen always seems to work. The guys are always ready to play. The game plan is never horrible. It's just a very antiquated offense. That's totally fair. And they seem to lose some winnable games sometimes. It's tough.
You know what? I think it's really hard to be super critical of a coach unless they blatantly underachieve.
Yes.
And I don't think you would argue that any of these teams have underachieved under his, you know, and certainly not blatantly underachieved. So, and I think that's really his entire career. I mean, you know, they've done, those teams in Seattle and Portland and here have essentially done what they were supposed to do. As you mentioned, they played to their seed and, you know, won 40, 45, 48 games, whatever it was, and that was it.
Right. If Brad Stevens gets fired tomorrow, yeah, okay, call for his head. That's fine. It's just that guy just isn't available that much. So we'll have to see. I do think, you know, like if he got swept in the first round this year with a fully healthy team, then I think the discussions really heat up. But I don't know if there's going to be a playoffs this year. Derek Schultz.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you would just hate, you know, and I don't know if we're going to be able to see it, but it would have been, you know, the frustration grows as it keeps happening again. And I think even with the context of Oladipo missing half the season and all these new faces, the frustration is building here in the city. They want to see this team finally take a step forward. And so, yeah, I agree with you.
Expectations kill everybody. But Derek Schultz, is there any Pacer stuff you want to talk about?
God, you know, it feels like the season ended a year ago. Like, you know, I have to remind myself about TJ Warren's efficiency and all of that. I'm starting to think that maybe we can salvage these playoffs, but to me, I just don't think that we're going to have fans in stands for any of the spring or summer sports. I think at the earliest, you're going to see that in the fall. And I think you might not see that in 2020 at all. That's kind of where I am. It's impossible to project, but I think that's the big storyline is I think we all agree we will see sports. Like, we're going to see golf and we're going to see racing and some of these other ones. And I do think that eventually we'll see team sports, but I think people have to prepare themselves to see team sports and games that they cannot attend.
Yeah, I am preparing mentally for a playoffs in Vegas with no fans, or like the – I don't know if you saw the Taiwan Baseball League with like the robot fans and the fake signs and stuff.
I did. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah,
maybe something like that. But yeah, I agree. I don't think Bankers Life's hosting another game this year. And they're doing construction in the summer, right? Like, can they even do it? You know, if it comes to that, I don't know. It's very, it's very complicated and delicate, but I agree with you that I think I will not personally be attending a Pacers game or any sporting event for that matter for a very long time. But it seems like, you know, baseball is pushing for, I think I saw today, like midsummer. So who knows? Maybe we're only like 2 months away. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm worried about baseball. They have the worst commissioner in sports, and that's really saying something when, you know, they Gary Bettman's still around and you know, Goodell and all these other guys. But
how does this stuff get out? Like the Arizona stuff got to ESPN, and then the next day MLB had to be like, well, this isn't true. It's like, well, clearly it was, and you guys just realized that everyone's dunking on you.
I do feel for them a little bit because I'm sure that was one of those things where they're spitballing a bunch of ideas and it you know, it's hard to get serious traction. Somebody got a hold of it and then, you know, kind of blew the lid off of it.
Yeah, it's something. Well, maybe we'll never know how the Pacers punt season would have ended, but probably better than that 4th-and-3 punt I referenced earlier. Is that still your pinned tweet on Twitter as your fake reaction?
Yeah, it is. I don't know. I always kind of – it's a play that lives in infamy forever, and I just remember – you know, sometimes you get ideas for things at weird times. And I woke up that morning, the next morning, it was a Sunday night football game. And I was there. I was up in the press box, incredulous as everybody else was. And I just remember I woke up, it was like 7 a.m. on a Monday. And I turned to my wife and I was like, honey, I need you to film me in the shower. And she's like, what the hell are you talking about? And there's this scene where I'm just like in shock and I'm in the shower and she's taping that with my iPhone. So.
I have it up right now.
Yeah, so I've always, yeah, left that.
Did she film you for like 2 minutes to make sure you got the toaster pop in the background?
Yeah, we had to do like 5 takes on that because one time, you know, the first 2 times she stopped it like right before it popped. But yeah, we had some
inedible,
you know, if you can't laugh about stuff like that, then, you know, what are you even doing?
Yeah.
But that's, especially in the world of sports radio, you just live for those moments because where people just have the visceral reaction to it. And that was certainly one of those.
Evan Sittery, Locked On Colts host. If you're listening, please do an episode on that one play. I would listen to that.
I Evan interned for me.
Hey, really? That's cool.
So I've known Evan for a while and he's done some nice work for himself out there in Arizona. So yeah. I'm proud of him.
Yeah. He's the Suns guru now. He's my guy for all that stuff.
Yeah.
Derek, thank you so much for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Tony. And I'm not saying this just because you invited me on, but I just I love your work. I'm not saying that because I got fired and I'm angling for a job or anything. I think what you do is really unique in the Pacers sphere of media, especially with your knowledge about contracts and all of that. And so keep it up, man. I'm happy to help you out anytime you need me to come on and. Happy to try to grasp to whatever fading relevance I still have in this great city of ours.
Derek was the first guy to have my Dossett tones on the radio. So clearly you have an eye for talent. What can I say?
Was I the first one, really? I thought I was the first one to have you in studio, but I didn't know I was the first one to have you on, period.
Yeah, that was my first one ever. I was so nervous.
Nice.
You talked about like the Colts when I was sitting in there, and I was like, I can't say anything. Like, I'm going to just melt into a puddle of nerves over here. Well,
that's what I always feel bad about whenever I have, you know, like we've had Scott Agnes or Mark Montes come in a bunch in studio, and it's like I always pre-warn them. I was like, guys, you know, especially in the summer months, I still gotta talk Colts because we're in Indianapolis, but I promise I'll get to you and we'll get some Pacer stuff in here.
It was really fun.
That's the way it is.
That was a super fun day, and I've done other radio stuff since, so I the experience was invaluable. I am awesome. Indebted to you.
I'm glad to hear that.
More than one 40-minute podcast worth of debt to you.
There you go.
So Derek, thank you so much. Everyone, Derek, you probably follow him if you follow me, if we're being honest. But Derek is on Twitter at Schultz975. You can go follow him for all your Indiana sports needs, including the video that we just talked about. I hope that gets – if that gets one like tomorrow, this was all worth it.
See me in the shower. Click on and round.
See Derek in the shower. As always, I'm on Twitter at TEastNBA, and the show is on Twitter at LockedOnPacers. That is all for today's show. Adam will be on Friday to do another What If episode series. I'm not sure what he's going to talk about, but I think it's the 13-14 team. So stay tuned for that, and have a great rest of your day.